You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network.
You're listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up.
Miami's got the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air.
Good morning, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily on this Tuesday, March the 30th. I am your host, Mike, and it is that time of year, folks. It is time to get ready for the 2021 NFL Draft. And just like we've done in previous years, we have our in-house NFL Draft expert, NFL Draft guru, Dante Colonnelli, who will be joining us each and every week to break down all the position groups and all the players. We'll talk about sleepers, what guys fit Miami, what Miami should do with each position group in the lead-up to the 2021 NFL Draft. Dante, who I think is sitting in a NASCAR race right now. Dante, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be back. I live on a very busy street in Center City, Philadelphia. So it does kind of get loud once in a while. But that's just how excited I am to talk about the draft, Mike. I'm just that excited. I had to rev my engines a little bit.
Yes. So here's what we're going to do. Each week, we're going to break down two position groups and go through a lot of the players at those groups and talk about how some of them might fit Miami, some of them might not, and how they sort of fit into Miami's needs and stuff. We're going to start off with a position group that's very popular amongst fans of the Miami Dolphins these days, and that's the running backs. So, Dante, let's start here. I think in the eyes of most of the experts, there's three top guys, and I've seen all these guys. Some people have ETN ranked first. Some people have Najee Harris ranked first, and there's even some people that have Javonte Williams ranked as their top running back. Would you say those three are the top of the class, and after that, there's a drop-off? It might not be a huge drop-off, but there's a drop-off of some sort.
Yeah, I would say that. I'm looking at my board right now, and I have those three guys grouped very, very closely together in between, number 18 and number 25. Then there's about a drop of 10 spots to my next running back in the mid-30s. So those three are definitely the top of the class. Three very, very different prospects as well. And that's what makes this running back class so interesting, in my opinion, is that there is a whatever type of running back you're looking for. You want a big guy, you can get a big guy. You want a short, strong guy, you got those. You want, pure speed, home run. You have that ability as well. You have short guys who can catch the ball. You have big guys who can catch the ball. Just a lot of variety. But yeah, those three, Najee Harris at Alabama, Javonte Williams at North Carolina, Travis Etienne out of Clemson, those are the top three. I think those will be the top three off the board as well. I would be surprised to see somebody else, get in front of those guys. I think, that seems to be the consensus right now amongst people who are significantly more plugged in than me, and I would agree with them.
Okay, so in your opinion, how do you rank them 1, 2, 3? Which order do you have them at right now?
Right. So I have Najee Harris as RB1, followed by Javonte Williams, RB2, and then Travis Etienne and RB3. And as I mentioned at the top, they're ranked very closely together. There's literally a 0.2 gap on my board as far as overall grades between Harris and Williams. Those are two players that I view very similarly. They bring a lot of similar things to the table, despite the fact that they are almost completely polar opposites from a physical standpoint. And then a small drop to Travis Etienne, who I think just had kind of a mediocre-ish last season. But he's still very, very good. So I don't want to make it sound like I think that there's a steep drop between those players. But for me, it's Harris, Williams, Etienne.
Yeah, and after that, there's a drop. And the next group of guys, I think, in the eyes of many, would sort of be the kid from Memphis there.
Kenneth Gainwell.
Yep, him and Michael Carter from North Carolina is in that second group, as well as the kid from Virginia Tech, Khalil Herbert, who do you have in that next group? How many guys sort of the next type of groupings? So if a team, let's just say Miami, doesn't get one of the top three, that next group of guys, how do you sort of have them clustered, and where do you see them sort of going?
Yeah, this is where, you know, predicting the running back spot gets incredibly difficult because teams, you know, value running backs wildly different, right? We see some teams like the Giants willing to draft one in the first round at number two, right? And then we see some teams like the Bills who, like, don't even care about running the football. So it makes things tough. I have Kenneth Gainwell as my next running back, my RB4. He's a player that I've got to see in person. And for me, that matters. And getting to see him up close, getting to see his speed, his physicality, his body type up close. He's the best receiving running back in this class, and that's something that I'm starting to value more as an evaluator, as the NFL starts to value that more. He's an incredibly talented player. I have a second round grade on him. Then I have Michael Carter from North Carolina. He was Javonte Williams' running mate, kind of the lightning to the thunder there. He's a player that I think brings a lot to the table. He's very quick. He's kind of similar as far as running style to Myles Gaskin, right? A similar type player. I think Carter's much better coming out of North Carolina than Gaskin was out of Washington. I think Carter's going to be drafted. So he's my RB5. Then after that, there's a little bit of a drop, but I would put Jarrett Patterson, the running back out of Buffalo, also in that grouping. Now, I'm a little bit higher on him than consensus, but I think you get a player who is just incredibly, incredibly sound with his vision, the way he picks his way through blocks, really, really good contact balance. He's deceptively fast for someone of his size. Now, he is incredibly short. I think he measured in at like 5'7", which means I'm taller than him, which is always a red flag if I'm taller than a prospect. So that's suboptimal, but he's another player that, again, I've seen in person. I've seen him in person. I've interviewed him in person. He's a very thoughtful kid. He's very smart. He is a really an interesting prospect. So, again, I have a third, fourth round grade on him. I think, you know, he's probably not a guy that you want to come in and give a lot of touches to early, but he's going to keep you on schedule. He's going to keep you in the game, but you're going to have to pair him with someone to kind of bring more home run ability to the table. But I really like Patterson in this class, so I kind of have him in that second group, although I think I'm much higher on him than a lot of other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other name that I think a lot of fans find interesting just because of the high-profile game he played in the last time is Trey Sermon from Ohio State. How do you view him?
Yeah, Sermon would be in like that next group for me. There's a huge clog of players really in the next group. You know, the first two groups are a little bit easier to pin down, and then there's just a lot towards like day three, right, when you start getting into day three grades. I like Trey Sermon a good bit. He was just a player who, like, I mean, honestly, just was not a factor until he woke up the day of the Northwestern game and decided to be the best running back in the country. It would have been really nice if he had decided that earlier in the season. But Sermon's a guy who's battled injuries. You know, he kind of had the transfer. He's just never been the guy, no matter where it was. At Oklahoma, you know, he got overshadowed by a couple different backs. At Ohio State, it took him the entire season before the Buckeyes realized that he was the best running back on the team. I like Trey Sermon. I think he'd be a really good pick for the Dolphins on day three. You can pair him with Myles Gaskin, Salvin Ahmed, anyone else you want to bring into that room later. I think that would be a good pick. He's more of an outside zone type back, so I'm not sure how well he fits systematically for the Dolphins, but he's a productive back. I think you have a couple of health question marks with him and then the scheme fit question mark. But, I mean, Sermon was wildly productive at the end of the season. I mean, the last three games of the year is probably no better back in the country outside of, like, maybe Najee Harris. So, you know, I could see why Dolphins fans would be interested in Sermon. I think he could be a day three target for the team. It just kind of depends on, again, how they view his medicals and how they view his scheme fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we get to some sleepers here, let's sort of – we know running back's a big need for the Dolphins, so let's spend some time here on this. We know the Dolphins need to get a guy who they can put with the group they already have with Myles Gaskin, Malcolm Brown, Salvin Ahmed. They're going to need a guy here to put with them. And I think most people think heading into this draft, within the first three rounds, – they're going to look to add a running back. That's where Miami has five picks and altogether in rounds 1, 2, and 3. They're obviously, they won't take one at 6. We know that they're not going to take one at 6. Now, when you get to pick 18, that's where a lot of fans of the Dolphins get very heated and they're, you know, entrenched in their camps. Some folks want Miami to take a running back there, get maybe the first one off the board. How high? So let's start this way. Looking at round 1. Miami's at pick 18. Do you think there's a chance a running back goes off the board in the first 17 picks before pick 18?
I would be absolutely shocked if a running back went off the board before that. The only team that worries me would be the Cardinals.
Yep.
Because they seem to have a skewed version of where they sit in the NFL hierarchy. And I could see them thinking that they're a running back away when in reality they are multiple things away in a very tough division that they have to compete in. But I could see them making a short-sighted pick like that. However, I still think it's unlikely. I really think, again, you know, we can talk about whether or not the Dolphins should take a running back at 18. If you follow me on Twitter, you know where I sit on that debate. But I would imagine all three of the top guys will be there when the Dolphins come on the clock at 18.
Yeah, I am with you with Arizona because, like you said, I think they're all in on this year. You don't make the moves they just made this offseason not to make a run at a Super Bowl. So whether most rational people think they can do that is a whole other debate. I think they think they're in that mode. So it would not shock me if they did take a Travis Etienne or Najee Harris or somebody like that to sort of put them with their wide receivers or put them with Murray and all that to make that run. So I am with you. If there is a team in the first 17, it would be Arizona. Now, when it comes to pick 18, here's where I stand. Do I want Miami to take a running back? I do. Do I think it will happen? I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell it's happening. So let's look after 18, because from 18, Miami's next pick is 36. So if Miami goes somewhere else, 18, which I think they will. They're going to go edge rusher or somewhere else. Offensive line's possible, I guess. Or maybe they take a second wide receiver if they take a wide receiver at the top of the draft. Or if they take Pitts at number 6, maybe they take a wide receiver at 18 and load up there. From pick 19 to pick 36, here are the teams I think that might be in the market for running back. I think the Jets at 23 could go running back. I think Pittsburgh at 24 could go running back. I think the Bills at 30 could go running back. Tampa Bay, I would have thought that, but they just re-signed Fournette, so I don't think they will. The Jets, again, at 34 could go running back. And even Atlanta, I guess, at 35 could go running back. When Miami's on the clock at pick number 36, what is your thoughts between Etienne, Harris, and Javonte Williams? How many will be on the board come pick 36, in your opinion?
So here's, I think, a minimum of one. I don't think all three of them will go before 36. I'm a little bit more lukewarm on the Jets taking a running back. Joe Douglas comes from a very heavy analytic background, and they are not typically inclined to take a running back. Now, I agree with you, they could. So I don't want to completely rule it out, but I'm kind of on the fence thinking I think they'll go with a different position. Pittsburgh at 24, that screams Najee Harris to me, that is a Pittsburgh pick. That's a Pittsburgh player. Would not be surprised. And then Buffalo at 30 also screams running back to me. So if I'm assuming that those are the two teams with the highest likelihood to take running back. So I think that'll leave Miami with one. So that'll either be, if I had to guess, I would assume that would be Najee Harris at 24 to Pittsburgh and Travis Etienne to Buffalo at 30, if I had to guess. So I would assume that Javonte Williams will probably be RB3 off the board. And I think he'll be there for the Dolphins at 36, whoever that RB3 ends up being, I think will be there. But yeah, those are the two teams that I would really worry about, because especially Pittsburgh at 24, like, that just screams a running back spot to me. So I would agree with you there. I do think someone will be there at 36. I really, really do. I don't think the Dolphins will have to move back up for a running back, and I don't think they should take one at 18 either. But 36, I think, is an okay spot for them. I think they can probably feel comfortable. You know, I think a lot of fans like, oh, you know, draft rooms have their guy and they're not willing to draft anyone else. And like, that's just not how it works. You know, they are comfortable with a plethora of options. They have a million things mapped out. They dedicate, you know, pretty much their lives to making draft boards, right? So like, they are comfortable with a lot of other options. I think Miami would be comfortable with Javonte Williams, Travis Etienne, Najee Harris, whoever ends up being that running back that falls to them at 36. I think they might pull the trigger there. So I'm pretty confident that at least one guy will be there.
Yeah, and the reason I throw in the Jets, not because I think the Jets will take one at 23, although they could. I think at 34, though, because they've already had two picks then, at pick 34, that's where they might throw caution to the wind and take a running back. So that's where it's going to be interesting to see heading into that Friday if Miami needs a running back and two are off the board? Do they get a little – because here's the thing about the Dolphins, as we know from what we saw last week. They have capital coming out the yin-yang. And if they have to move up a spot or two or three to get a guy they want, they can. Last year, they didn't at running back. They waited. We all heard the rumor report that they were about to take one at the end of round two, and he went one pick before. Nobody knows if that's 100% true, but it's been out there for a year. If they really wanted the kid, I think they would have made the move. I don't think they were that in love with him. Otherwise, they just sat and they were fine. This year, though, running back's a need on this team. It's probably one of the top three needs on this team. So I don't know that Friday night, if two of them are off the board at pick number 36, if they don't get a little nervous and maybe move up. But if they don't, I think by pick number 50, all three of those guys are gone for sure. So if they don't get one by pick 36, now Miami looks in that second tier. Are any of these guys worthy of taking at pick 50, or at that point should they wait till round three and just sort of roll the dice? Round three or round four?
I mean, I would be comfortable taking Kenneth Gainwell or Michael Carter at pick 50. I don't think the Dolphins will be comfortable with Kenneth Gainwell. I don't think he meets their size thresholds. But I would not be surprised if they draft Michael Carter at pick 50. I think that he kind of goes with the what the Dolphins have so far valued at running back between Salvin Ahmed and Miles Gaskin. You know, Michael Carter is kind of that similar type player, right? And I think a lot of fans are like, oh, they're going to love Najee Harris because he brings something different to the table. And it's like, yeah, I mean, maybe. But, like, maybe the Dolphins just really like short dudes who are quick at running back. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know. Like, there is nobody on the roster who runs with, you know, considerable power. Yeah, I mean, like, sure, they bring in Malcolm Brown. They tried Jordan Howard. But it doesn't really seem like it's something they value. It's more or less just something we would like to have if we can get it for cheap. So I think they might value someone a little bit different. And that type of player is Michael Carter at pick 50. So I would not be surprised if that's a direction they want to go. But again, like, Carter's a player who, if you draft him at pick 50, that's fine. I think that's good value. He is not a workhorse back. That is not where he's going to be successful. So the Dolphins are still going to be doing running back by committee, which is something that I personally support. But again, if you want to do running back by committee, maybe you want to draft someone like Oklahoma running back Ramondre Stevenson, who's like kind of in that second, third-ish tier, but he brings more power. So I've tweeted this before too, is like, I think this draft is going to tell us a lot about how Miami views the running back position. It really is. Because you said, it's a top need. And not only is it going to show us, it's like, okay, do they value this position at all? It's also going to show us what type of running back they value. Do they want a well-rounded committee of guys who can do different things? Or are they really like short, quick dudes who can catch the ball out of the backfield? I don't know. That might be their type. That might be what they like. We'll see. We'll find out. But yeah, Michael Carter is probably the guy that I would pin at pick 50 as a Dolphins type pick. If they want to go in a different direction, you know, I think that's too high for Stevenson or possibly Trey Sermon. But if they're trying to go in a different direction from what they already have on the roster, those would be the other two guys I would mention.
Yeah, and that's why I sort of said a few moments ago, if it were me, I would take one at 18, but I put more value on that spot than I know they probably do. And I hope I'm wrong. I just think they're going to be a team that's a running back by committee approach. I would not be shocked. I would not be stunned if 1 month from now, after the NFL draft's done, they take a guy at running back in round three or four, or maybe pick number 50, go out there, give a cheap one-year deal to someone like James Conner and say, here's our running back room, Miles Gaskin, Salvin Ahmed, the rookie, Malcolm Brown, James Conner. Good enough. We'll figure it out as we go. And that's what I think that is going to be their type of approach. If I had all the power, I wouldn't. I put more value into a running back than most. But we'll see, because I think that's going to be the interesting thing, because we don't know how they value that. But just from stuff I've seen, heard, I think it's going to be like the Patriot way, where they have like a bunch of guys, and each week you don't know which one will be the guy.
Yeah, and then I would argue that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I'm a big, you know, running backs don't matter. I hate that turn of phrase, because it's not the running back that doesn't matter. Like, people think it's like, oh, people just hate running backs, and that's just not what that means. But I think a committee would serve Miami well. I mean, you know, I don't want to say it worked for New England because, like, you know, they had Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, exactly, the two biggest outliers in the world. But
it worked for Tampa Bay.
Right, it worked for Tampa Bay, well, right? Like Leonard
once again,
Fournette.
Tom Brady.
Right, yeah, ironically, right? But like Leonard Fournette is like literally the epitome of running backs don't matter. He was drafted at fourth overall by the Jaguars, and he was so bad that they cut him because he was replaceable by a UDFA that they got out of Illinois State this year in James Robinson. And then the team that spent almost nothing on him got him to be productive to win a Super Bowl. He is the antithesis. Like, he exemplifies running backs don't matter to a T. And I get wanting to take one at 18. I understand the inclination, right? Like, production's great. People love that. But you can build running back by committee. There are so many more positions that just hold so much value, in my opinion, that I would look at 36 or 50 for running back.
All right, now let's close out here the running backs. Give me a couple sleepers. And by sleepers, we're talking about guys like rounds 5, 6, and 7, or even who might go undrafted. Give me some sleepers. Give me a like one or two. And I got one name I want to throw out there, and I want to get your thoughts on. But you go first and give me a couple sleepers.
Yeah, so I have these guys graded a little bit higher, but I do think they'll be drafted in round 5 or round 6. The first one is Javion Hawkins, the running back from Louisville. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's a smaller guy, but he is incredibly, incredibly explosive. A big-time home run threat. Very, very quick, crafty in the open field. Good juke moves, good spin moves. Short area quickness is very good. Not a player you want toting the load. You know, this is not a player you want to turn around and hand the ball off to 20 times. But again, drafting in the 5th or 6th round, you're going to have to take what you can get. He's a home run threat. He can create big plays for you. Very, very good pass catcher. The other name I would throw out would be Jermar Jefferson, the running back from Oregon State. He's a player that I watched very recently, and I really, really liked him. Incredibly, incredibly explosive as well. He's a little bit bigger than Hawkins. He has a little bit better vision, but he's not as dynamic. He's very explosive in a straight line, but he's not much of a juker, spin move type guy. You know, he's very much, I'm going to plant my foot in the ground. I'm going to run as hard as possible in one direction. And if you stop me, great. If you don't, I'm going to score. But I think that he's a very, very good complementary back. You know, he can kind of be the lightning to someone else's thunder in a lot of schemes. So those are the two guys that I would peg. I really like those players. I think this running back class is overall like very deep. There's a lot of good players to be had here on day 3.
Yeah, and one of the kids I like doesn't have super fast speed, but I think is just a productive guy who can be part of a team that has a running back by committee. Is Stevie Scott out of Indiana. I'm a big fan of his. I just think he probably should have went back to school for one more year, but I think he's a kid who can find a spot in this league. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I haven't written him up. You know, he's a little bit more down my list, but yeah, he's super interesting. That whole Indiana offense had a breakout year this year, yeah. So it was nice to see that from him. I think, yeah, he could be a guy. I think he's probably a UDFA, right, that you bring in. But
exactly.
Again, like, Ahmed, UDFA, Miles Gaskin, UDFA, like Dolphins have had, you know, some success with those guys. So, yeah, it would not surprise me. I think Scott's a good camp body. I think he's a guy that you bring
in. Nice size. Nice size to
exactly,
complement
right?
What they already have, Miami. You can, you know, take him around 7 or sign him if he goes undrafted to maybe complement what they already have there.
Right. And, you know, hopefully, you know, he prevents you from paying a guy like Malcolm Brown. Right. Like, you know,
exactly.
He becomes the big
body. 1 year from
now,
he can replace him.
There you go. Yeah. So I like that.
Let's talk offensive tackles. We're going to talk about all the offensive line, but let's start offensive tackles. And I think round 1, we're going to see a bunch of them go off the board. I could see 1, 2, 3, 5 maybe go off the board in round 1 or so, roughly. Penei Sewell, most people have him number 1. I know some people have Rashawn Slater number 1. Are those two, they're obviously 1 and 2 on almost everyone's boards. How far is there of a drop off after those top 2, and which one do you have ranked higher?
So my tackle 1 is Penei Sewell, and then I have Rashawn Slater at 2. I'm a little bit lower, not a lot, but a little bit lower on Slater than consensus. I don't think he's quite the stalwart prospect that everyone's making him up to be. I think he's incredibly good. He's a very good football player. He's going to be a top 15 pick. He deserves to be a top 15 pick, but I'm not in the boat that says he should be a top 10 guy. I've seen, you know, some people have Atlanta taking him at 4. So for me, the drop between him and the next tackle is not very far. It is 1 spot. I have Rashawn Slater, and then I have Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State ranked directly below him. So for me, that drop is not very far. This tackle class is incredibly talented. This is one of the best tackle classes that I've scouted since I started doing this in 2017. Incredible depth. There's going to be a ton of guys who go on the in the first round. There's going to be a ton of guys who go, you know, early in the second round. If the Dolphins are a tackle team, if they evaluate themselves as a tackle team, I don't know if they will, but they might, and I would argue that they should. These guys are going to come off the board quickly. So, you know, you need to pick them, you know, with high picks. This is not a, you know, the tackle class is deep. It's good. That's great. But the Dolphins want to get a starter. They don't need to draft another project to tackle. They already have two projects to tackle. That defeats the purpose. So they need to draft these guys quickly. And I don't think that there's a big gap between, you know, I think there's a bigger gap between 1 and 2 than 2 and 3. I don't know if the NFL agrees with me, but that's just my personal take on it.
Yeah, I think you're going to see Penei Sewell in round one, Slater round one. I think Jenkins is round one. I think the kid from Virginia Tech, Christian Darcy, is round one. The kid from Texas could slide into round one. I think Samuel Kasemi, and the kid from USC, who I know can play a little bit inside as well, Elijah Vera Tucker. I think those are all round one guys. Now, some of them are more NFL ready than others, like you said. But I think there's going to be a bunch of offensive tackles round one. And with the Dolphins, I don't know what their view is on Robert Hunt. Here's what I think. Austin Jackson's their left tackle. That ain't changing. I think that Solomon Kinley, I think he'll do one more year at right guard probably, but long term he's going to replace Eric Flowers at left guard. I think that's probably the plan. Center, we'll talk about that next. The right side, what they want to do with Robert Hunt, I have no idea. And for the kid's sake, because Miami used a high round two pick on him. Pick a position, just leave him there. The back and forth, inside and out, is what ruins these kids. You have to let them just grow and learn at one spot. And I don't know if they want him at right guard. I don't know if they want him at right tackle. But if it's right tackle, leave him there. And I wouldn't take an offensive tackle early in this draft. But if they view him, after what they saw last year, as more of a guard, fine. No problem with that. Then, yes, they need a right tackle. And if they wanted to take one at pick 18, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point, right? And this is going to be the big thing for me is, like, I mean, I think the Dolphins need two tackles personally. I'm not a big Austin Jackson guy, was not a big Austin Jackson guy when they drafted him, did not think he played well this year. I would argue that Robert Hunt was the best tackle on the team last year, and I think he's a guard. So that's where I'm at with the tackle spot. But I agree, right? Pick one, right? Like, you're either
pick
okay.
One. I don't even care which one. Right. Pick one and right. Leave the kid there. And right. Let him sink or swim at that spot.
I agree. I totally agree with you there. So I think that they either need to commit to him being, they're going to be like, look, he's the right tackle. Even though everyone ranked him as a guard and he plays like a guard, we're going to play him at right tackle. Okay, fine, whatever. But pick one. Again, like, this class has a lot of really good players. For me, tackle is such a valuable spot that if I'm even, like, having the conversation with myself, like, I'm on the fence if I want to replace this guy, and I'm there at 18, and there's a player that I really like, I'm pulling the trigger there, right? Like, it's just not, like, tackle's such a valuable spot. And right now, I'm in a position where I have second-year quarterback now. I need to protect him, right? Like, I'm not interested in, like, waiting around for maybe Austin Jackson will be good in year three. Like, that is not appealing to me. It never was, especially when I drafted him in the first round. So, I think the Dolphins would be inclined to pull the trigger early. I think they should. But again, it's going to come down to how do they self-evaluate. You know, maybe they agree with you, right? And they think Austin Jackson's the left tackle. We're going to let him develop that. You know, we're not messing with that. And then on the other side, they might say, you know what? Robert Hunt, he played well enough at tackle. We're going to keep him there. We're only going to worry about the interior. I don't know. We'll see how they self-evaluate tackle. But I think there's upgrades to be had in this tackle class in the first round at either spot. So that's why I always say that I think they should draft a tackle. But again, we'll see what the Dolphins want to do. They have to self-evaluate that position and come to that conclusion. I'm not so sure that they will.
Well, okay, so let's take this two ways first. First, with Austin Jackson, you might be right. He might not be the guy, but they just took him last year, and they can't look to replace him 12 months later because they'll look like idiots. I mean, it's just they can't. In my opinion, I should say, I'd be shocked if they were looking to replace him 12 months later if they used a high pick on him last year. But if they're in the market for a tackle, whether they want to move Austin Jackson to the right, they want to move Hunt inside, say they want to move Hunt inside, and they want an offensive tackle, whether to play left tackle and take Austin Jackson to the right side or leave Austin Jackson where he is, and they need a right tackle. Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater, one of them will probably be on the board at pick six. What are your thoughts on Miami taking an offensive tackle pick six and just really going all in on offensive line? Because obviously they took three guys last year that were on the field a lot. Whether they were good or not is a whole different story. They're on the field a lot. You can add one more guy to the mix and say, we need to fix this offensive line come hell or high water. We're at pick number six now. Nobody knows what Atlanta will do. Nobody knows what people think. Here's what Cincinnati, everyone sort of has penciling them in for an offensive tackle. And if I had a bet, $100, I'll bet you $100 will probably take an offensive tackle. But do not put it past stupid organizations to do stupid things. And there was a report on Monday that Chase is in the mix there for that pick number five with Cincinnati. I don't think they need Chase. I don't think they should be adding a wide receiver. But once again, stupid organizations do stupid things. And that is one of the dumbest organizations over the last 20 years. So do not put it past them to take a wide receiver over an offensive tackle when their quarterback got hit like a drum last year. I don't think it'll happen. I won't be stunned. But at pick six, Slater, Sewell, one of them, maybe both, will be on the board. Would you consider Miami taking one at six?
I would take Penei Sewell at six. I would not take Rashawn Slater at six. So for me, it would just be like, and again, like this is just like I've used Sewell. He is the highest tackle grade that I've ever given out, right? So like for me, he is the best tackle prospect that I have ever scouted. And I know that that's like a big term, and I try not to throw that around a lot, but like his film grade and his overall grade on my board is just incredibly high. So it's almost, for me, taking Sewell at six is like less to do with the Dolphins needing a tackle or needing to fix the offensive line and just like, look, yeah, failure. Like just draft good football players and figure out the rest later for me, right? Like that's how I view Penei Sewell. That's how high I am on Penei Sewell. Now, you know, people I've spoken with who are more plugged in than me, they keep telling me, they've been telling me since the summer, look, man, the NFL just doesn't view Sewell like that, right? Like the media is just way higher on Sewell than the NFL is. I don't know if that's true. I don't know how much I trust those people. That's what I've been told. So for me, I would draft Sewell at six. Again, I was on the, you know, I would have drafted Sewell at three before we traded back and then up again, right? So like not much has changed for me. I would not consider Rashawn Slater there. Rashawn Slater is a fantastic prospect. I think it sounds like I'm coming off hard on him. He's incredibly good. He's very, very good. He's going to be a starter for a long time, whether that's tackle, guard, even at center. I've seen some people put him at, which I think is ridiculous, but whatever. He's going to be very good. I don't think he's worth the top six pick. Like that's a little bit much for me. Like Quentin Nelson is the he was the sixth pick, right? Like that's what you want to get when you draft an offensive lineman with the sixth pick, is someone who comes in and he's an all pro and he's always going to be an all pro. And like, he's just fantastic. That for me is Penei Sewell. That is not Rashawn Slater, in my opinion.
One name I want to throw out there is Alex Leatherwood. I remember a year ago this time, when he went back to school and stuff, some people were saying he should have went pro. He might have got picked under round one, top of round two. Where do you see Leatherwood going, and did he make a mistake returning to college?
It's tough to say because nothing changed about how I view Leatherwood from this year to last year. He was a second-round guy for me last year. He's a second-round guy for me this year. Everything about his film stayed the same. I do think that he brings a little bit more to the table as a guard. I just think that that is probably his best spot. He's incredibly long. He's incredibly powerful. He can move guys in the running game. I think that he's a guard. Now, can you play him at tackle and survive there, right? Like a la Robert Hunt? Like, can you do it? Sure. Is that the best use of your resources? I would argue probably not. But I think Leatherwood's a solid player. I think the media is just kind of like taking it. I think we took it too far with him being a bona fide first rounder. And now everyone's just like, he's terrible. He's a day three pick. Like, I think it's going to end up somewhere in the middle. He's always been a second rounder for me. That's how I feel about him. I just think he's a solid prospect. Is he great? No. Is he going to be, you know, I also don't think he's going to be a bust. I don't think he's going to be terrible. He's just solid. He's going to come in. He'll play well. He's smart. He's position versatile. He brings a lot to the table. A great second round pick. Would not draft him higher than that, though.
Elijah Vera Tucker. I know some people view him as a guy who should move inside. Some people view him as a tackle. Where do you see him? I think he'll probably go in round one, maybe mid to late. I don't know. How do you view him?
I love Elijah Vera Tucker. He's one of my favorite prospects in this class. I actually
a lot of versatility.
Yeah, I actually have him ranked higher than Rashawn Slater in a vacuum. I think he's the second best offensive lineman in this class, whether you play him at guard, whether you play him at tackle. You know, and I tried to tell, I was on a different podcast talking about the Dolphins before, and right, and like I tried to say, like, you don't understand, like, Vera Tucker was next to Austin Jackson, and he was the better player playing guard than Austin Jackson was when Austin Jackson was there. Austin Jackson left. Vera Tucker swung out to take his place and outplayed Austin Jackson again at his own position, right? Like, that's the type of player that we're dealing with here. A guy who, like, I do not need to project him to guard, right? Like, people are like, oh, you know, we'll just kick Slater inside and we'll just kick Sewell inside. Like, those guys play tackle. I haven't seen them at guard. I have physically seen Elijah Vera Tucker be one of the best guards in the country and then kick outside the very next year and be one of the best tackles in the country. I don't need to project. I've seen it. So he is an incredibly high grade on my board. I love him. I think he's exceptional, powerful, you know, really good anchor. His length is a little meh, but I think he could survive a tackle. He's fine at guard, perfect measurables for a guard. He's a good athlete, good mover, good power. He brings everything you could possibly ask for from an offensive line prospect to the table. So for me, like, he's the perfect target, I think, for Miami at 18. Like, that is, like, over the moon. I think you get him because, again, you can play him at guard. If you don't like him there or you do not like the play that you're getting from your tackles, you can kick Vera Tucker out there. He just brings so much versatility to the table, and his versatility is different than other players because, again, I have seen it. I don't have to project it. I've seen him dominate a guard and dominate a tackle. So he's a very, very special type of versatile, in my opinion. I really, really love Elijah Vera Tucker. I will be incredibly upset if the Dolphins pass on him at 18. If he's
well, I don't
on
think
the
he's
going
to be on the board.
I was about to say that. I don't
I
think
did
he
my
gets
first
that
mock
far.
Draft, and it, you know, it's my mock draft, so of course it's right. I did my first mock draft, and I had him going to the Giants at pick 11 because I think the Giants need offensive line help everywhere. And he's a guy, if they want to play him at guard, great. If they want to play him at offensive tackle, great. He can help the Giants because their offensive line is a mess. I had him going there because I already had Slater off the board as well as Sewell. I think he's going to be maybe the next one off the board after those two. I think he's got the chance to be that good.
I agree. And that's what I would assume, too. And just, again, like, what he brings to the table is just so rare because we always project these guys inside, but we never see it. We've seen it with him. And honestly, like, I think he's a good tackle. I really do. Like, I maybe he's a better guard, and I get that. But, like, I really think he'll be fine. I think he'd be a fine tackle. I think he's got the foot speed for it. I think his length is a little bit short, but it's not terribly bad. I think he's got the knee bend, the athleticism, the things that you look for in a tackle prospect. Vera Tucker has it all. So I really just think, you know, you're getting probably an all-pro guard and maybe like a Pro Bowl tackle in this player at his ceiling if he develops correctly and he translates well. That's the type of player that you're getting. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think he either comes off the board before Miami picks or, you know, Miami might take him at 18. I'd be shocked if he fell beyond that. I think that would be a big mistake from the league, frankly.
Okay, so looking at round one, when it comes to offensive tackles, a lot of teams need help. I think we could see, obviously, Atlanta go there. You could see Cincinnati go there. But let's go from after pick six, because I don't think of pick six. I think Miami, they moved up to get a wide receiver or Pitts. So after pick six, you could see from the Broncos at 9, Cowboys even at 10, I guess, Giants at 11, Chargers for sure at 13, Minnesota at 14. There's about 4 or 5 teams that could go offensive tackle. How many offensive tackles, in your opinion, will be off the board by pick 18? I'm thinking at least 4.
Yeah, I think that's a good number, right? Because, I mean, you assume that one of
Sewell,
Cincinnati,
Slater,
Atlanta, right?
Yeah, Sewell, Slater, Vera Tucker, and the kid from Virginia Tech, who we really haven't spoken about a lot. I think those four
Aerosol, are going to,
yeah. I think those four will be off the board by pick 18. So I don't know if there's value for Miami to take someone else. I mean, you could take the kid from Texas, I guess, Samuel Kasemi, and there's going to be some other, and from Oklahoma State with Jenkins. I mean, wouldn't be a crazy pick there. Wouldn't be crazy. I don't think Miami's going to do that because I think they're going to give the guys they took last year a little bit more rope and see what they do this year before they jump all in with the offensive tackles next year, maybe. Pick 36, though. Let's slide this over because where Miami has a big need, I think, is its center. Yeah. I think they need a center in the worst way. And I think 18's probably too high for a center, although if they fall in love with a guy, it's never too high. But I think 18's too high. But pick 36 could be center. And there's a couple centers here where the Miami Dolphins could be looking at there with either Creed Humphrey or Landon Dickerson. So let's go centers before guards. Although really with those two spots are kind of interchangeable these days, as most of the guards can play center if they have to. Who's your top center in this draft class?
Yeah, my top center. So taking, you know, guards out of the picture, it would be Landon Dickerson. His film is phenomenal. I mean, bona fide first rounder. He is an absolute beast. Best offensive lineman on that Alabama line this year. For me, it's not even remotely close. Mauler, quick feet, good hands, good length, checks every box imaginable. Leadership, starts, experience, fantastic film. The problem with Dickerson is that this is a player who's had roughly four season-ending injuries. I've got one in 2016, 2017, 2018, and 2020. That's a bit of a problem, right? And I don't grade red flags because I'm not a doctor. That's not my job. I just grade film. I'm barely a scout, so I just do that. And again, but that is something that you're going to have to consider. So, you know, Dickerson's film, yeah, he's the best center in this class. I don't even really think it's close. But those four red flags, those four injuries are incredibly, incredibly concerning, especially for an offensive lineman who has to carry a lot of weight on their frame. But man, is his film good, man. Like he's a very, very good football player. Ranked pretty close to him for me would be Creed Humphrey out of Oklahoma. Also a very, very good football player. Good athlete. He's a little bit shorter. I don't think he can play guard. I think he's a pure center. But he's incredibly smart. Really, really good with his leverage points. Really, really good using angles and getting up to the second level. He tested really well. He tested much better than the athlete that he looks on film. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic. I would not be surprised if Humphrey's a Dolphins guy in the second round. I think that, you know, his wrestling background, his leadership, his experience, those are the types of things that Brian Flores and Chris Greer are going to eat up. We know how much this team cares about character and personality. Like, they probably care more about that than most of the other teams in the NFL. Humphrey's that guy. He's going to win them over in the interviews. And he's also incredibly impressive on the field. And I agree with you. I think center is a huge need. This team needs to get a center in the building. So those would be the top two guys for me. I think Humphrey is the cleaner prospect because he doesn't have the injury concerns, but Dickerson provides a higher ceiling, in my opinion.
Okay, so I would think either of those guys would be way too high to pick 18, but pick 36, you'd be okay if they went with either one of those guys there. Is that a good sort of landing spot for them, you think, top part of round two?
Yeah, I would think so, for sure. And obviously, you know, with Dickerson, if you draft him at 36, you've vetted his injury concerns and you're yes. comfortable with that, obviously. Yep. Yes. And then I'm totally fine. I think both of those guys would be absolutely fantastic picks at 36. I think they come in day one. I think they start. I think they're better than Matt Skura. They're definitely better than Ted Karras, who's with New England now. Yeah, I think they come in. They are your starter. They're your guy. I think obviously you get Dickerson in there with Tua. That would be cool to see those guys back together. But great pick there. I think it's good value. It's perfect team need, and those guys definitely warrant that pick with their talent as well.
Okay, the next center I'd say is a guy who up until the Senior Bowl, nobody could have named if their life depended on it, which is Quinn Meneerez. He went to the Senior Bowl and he put on a show, which great for him because he got himself probably paid that week. And I don't know when he's going to get picked, probably that round two, round three range, because he's a guy everyone has sort of fallen in love with. But he went to UW-Whitewater, and competition level there is obviously going to be a factor to how he projects into the NFL. What are your thoughts on him? And is he more of a – is he a true center, or is he going to be someone who some teams might want to play at guard?
Yeah, he's super interesting. I think that he's a player – when he went to the Senior Bowl, like, he did not play center at UW-Whitewater at all. Zero reps at center. He was a guard. He was the left guard, and they used him as just a hammer. They were like, you're going to pull on every run, and you're going to steamroll whoever's in your way, and we are going to run right behind you for 30 plays a game. And that's what they did, and he was really good at it. But when he went to the Senior Bowl, they immediately put him in at center because that's kind of where his measurables project. He's going to have to figure out how to snap the ball, which is funny, but like it's kind of a thing.
We already have a guy who can't snap the ball, so I wouldn't add him if I'm Miami. We already got that issue.
Right. So, like, you know, he really is. I mean, he's never taken a snap in a real game, ever. Zero. None. Not a single one. So that's something you're going to have to project. Now, however, taking that out of the equation, he's a top 50 player on my board. I think he's incredibly, incredibly talented. Very, very good power. Very, very clean in what pass sets he was given. But he is not a player that you draft and I think you expect to play maybe the first 6 weeks of the season. I do think you can get him into the lineup week one. I think he's a fantastic scheme fit for the Dolphins. This is a team that, you know, outside of Austin Jackson, wants linemen that are going to punch you in the mouth in the running game. They're going to be maulers. That is Quinn Meinerz to a T. That's what he does best. But again, like, he's a guy who, like, does not pass set a lot. And, like, you know, his pass set reps are kind of up and down. So you're going to have to teach him how to pass set a little bit better. He looked much better at the Senior Bowl in his pass set. So, like, there's already growth that's there, and that's very encouraging. But you're going to have to teach him that, and you might also have to teach him how to snap the ball as a center, which is easier said than done, but also not something that would concern me so much that I wouldn't draft him. So I do think that he's probably going to be a center in the league. I don't think it's a coincidence that they moved him there at the Senior Bowl when he didn't play there at all in college. But I think he's a really good prospect. I think he's worth a top 50 selection, maybe not 36, but pick 50. I think that could be a good spot for him. He's really impressive for a D3 guy. I just think you have to be realistic in your expectations for him early in his career. And I'm not sure Miami is going to be the team.
No,
yeah, I'm not sure that's going to be the team.
They can't.
From a scheme perspective, he's a fantastic fit. From a developmental time perspective, not sure he's their guy.
No, not at all. If a team like Jacksonville or the Jets right now who are starting their rebuild might have a little bit more patience and time with a new head coach, I totally get it. This is year three for Brian Flores. We have offensive linemen who are still going through that process. To add one more to the mix, I think would be a huge mistake. Look, I got nothing against the kid. I wish him well. It's guys like this, though, who from these small schools nobody ever heard of, has a good few days at the Senior Bowl. If a general manager uses a top 50 pick on him, I think that means you got a dumb GM. Because, I mean, the kid, how you can translate a kid from that level of school to the NFL, and I know you could probably throw five examples of me of it where it worked, but I can throw 100 more where it hasn't. I think it's a huge mistake. I mean, round three, anything after, I would say from round three on, roll the dice, take your chance. Because there does come a point in every NFL draft where you're just taking shots on guys. You do research and you do your homework, but there's a lot of luck involved with this too. But round one and two, I think you need guys who, there's no such thing as a sure thing, but more of a sure thing. Closer to a sure thing than not. And that kid is a big roll of the dice. Josh Myers from Ohio State. I've always been a big fan of him. Every time I watch Ohio State, because they're on TV like every week. Well, I mean, every game's on every week, but they're on like the primetime games every week, it seems like. Josh Myers from Ohio State. What are your thoughts on him at center?
Yeah, he's interesting. I think he's a strictly zone center, probably. I was not over the moon with Myers' film. I think he's solid. I think he's probably a guy that goes in the third round and, like, you know, he starts for a couple of years. I'm just not sure I don't think he has a high ceiling, honestly. Like, I just think that, you know what, maybe he comes in and he's okay and that's fine. And then the Dolphins might be okay with drafting that type of player at center and just like, all right, like, he's going to come in. He's better than Matt Skura, and like he's marginally better than Ted Karras, and we're okay with that. And maybe that's fine. But for me personally, he just doesn't do a ton for me. I think he's a fine football player. There's nothing wrong with him. However, there's also nothing great about him. You know, he's a player who's like, yeah, he's good at everything, but he's also not great at anything. So if that's the type of player the Dolphins are looking for to kind of plug at center there, I think that that's a good pick. I think that, you know, he would be a guy that I would consider probably with our top pick in the third round. Again, if he's still there and if I haven't addressed center, that would be someone that I would look at, because once you get past Dickerson and Humphrey in the center class specifically, not just talking interior O-line in general,
just center, pure center,
just center, you are, you know, really slim pickings. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're taking the kid from UW Whitewater, who's got an incredibly high ceiling and a really low floor, or you're taking Josh Myers, who, like, the ceiling is the floor, if that makes sense, right? Where it's just like, yeah, he is the player that you're going to get, and that's fine. But, like, also, you're probably going to want to replace him again in 2 years. So I think Myers is okay. There's nothing wrong with him coming in and starting early if you take him in the third round. But I'm not sure he's a player that ever is, like, you know, I don't want to use the term franchise center because that sounds ridiculous. But yeah, you know what I mean when I say that.
He's not
going
to wow you. He's not a long-term answer. But for Miami, if he, like, sat a year behind Matt Skira, and maybe in a year from now he's like your number one center, wouldn't be the end of the world either. But you then know you still need to find a long-term answer there at some point. Down, it's sort of a kick the can down the road approach, which isn't bad. There's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, it all depends where you take him. You're not going to take someone like him with your picks in round two, but come round three or four if he's there. There is a little bit to say for that then. But I think when it comes to center, there's a few spots heading into this draft Miami really needs to address. Running back, like we said, those four picks in the top 50, if they come out Miami in whichever order, with a wide receiver, an edge rusher, running back, center, I think they address the four biggest needs on this team as of today. And that's why we're starting here with running backs, and then I went to the offensive line to sort of focus on center, because I think center's a need. It really is a need, and whoever they take might not start this year, or they might not start the first half of this year, as they'll give the guy they just signed here from the Ravens, Matt Skura, a chance here to see if he can fix his snapping issues, which is always weird for a center. You have a center with snapping issues. Kind of scares me, honestly. But I do think center is a need, and once we hit pick number 36, and once they're on the clock, Miami, I would not be stunned to see them look for a center from that point on, because I do think it's a big need. And you can say what you want about guard. They still have Eric Flowers. They still have Solomon Kinley. You have Hunt. Who knows where he's going to be? You still have Jesse Davis. Offensive tackle, Austin Jackson. They're going to give him more time. And you obviously have Hunt. And you have Jesse Davis. They might go offensive tackle. If they do go there, I think they will shock the world and take one at pick six, which I don't think is going to happen. But I think if they do go offensive tackle, it'd be at the top, not at 18 or not at 36 or 50. But I think center's a big need. I really do.
I totally agree. And I think the Dolphins agree with this too, right? Like, this was a team that was in pursuit of David Andrews, who got, like,
yes,
you know, a pretty decent deal from the Patriots. It wasn't like, oh, you know, I got a 1 year deal. Like, they gave him like a 4 year contract. So, like, you know, the Dolphins were willing to spend money on center. So I think they clearly agree with us. And again, like, I think center is incredibly important. I think it's more important than guard in some schemes. And I think the Dolphins could really benefit from getting an upgrade there. I don't know if that's going to be Matt Skura. If he returns to, like, pre-injury Matt Skura, he is most definitely an upgrade. He was an incredibly good player about 2.5 years ago. So, again, that's asking a lot of a player. But I agree with you. They need to address center at some point in this draft. You know, there's a couple of guys like late on day three, sleeper guys that they could take. But honestly, if I was Miami, then, and you don't like to pigeonhole yourself like this, and they technically haven't because they got Skura, but, like, I would have to come out of this draft with either Creed Humphrey or Landon Dickerson, one way or the other. And what's really scary about that is that, I mean, Dickerson's injury history makes him, like, he might just be off boards because, yeah, like, he's got like four knee surgeries at this point. So you've almost pigeonholed yourself into, like, we need to draft Creed Humphrey at X pick. And if he's not there, then we're screwed. So that does worry me a little bit, if I'm being honest, because, like, again, pure centers, not considering guard, this class is a little bit thin. You know, that there's two really good prospects at the top and then a lot of dice rolls at the bottom.
Is there any chance Creed Humphrey goes in round one, you think?
Oh, is there a chance? Sure.
I mean, sure, there's a chance, but is it okay? Is it a strong chance? Is it a weak chance?
I think there's a weak chance. I think, again, he tested really well and everyone's testing really well. You know what I mean? Like, I just ran a 4.3 to my job this morning, you know, like everyone's running 4.3s right now. But, you know, Humphrey tested like really well, like, you know, incredibly, incredibly well, especially given his film. Not that he was a bad athlete on film, but like, you know, this is not a player where you pop on the tape and you're like, man, you know, that guy's really moving. But, you know, so he could go at the back end of the first round, maybe a trade up, you know, somebody wants to get that fifth year option on him. Maybe, you know, I could see one of the playoff teams drafting him as an upgrade if they want to cut someone later for salary cap reasons, because like, I think he comes in and he just starts. Like, and, you know, maybe he's not a Pro Bowl type player, but he's just very good. He's very solid, very reliable. So is there a shot? Yeah. But if I'm Miami and I've made two picks that I like at 18 and he's on the board at 36, like, I'd pull the trigger. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't want to mess around with that and wait.
Yeah, because if I'm the Dolphins at pick number six, you take one of the wide receivers, or maybe you take Pitts. Makes perfect sense. I think that's probably the plan. Pick 18, I'm thinking they're going edge rusher, because I think that is a part of the draft from pick like 11, 12 to like pick 18. You're going to see a lot of those edge rushers go flying off the board. I think Miami's going to want to be in there on an edge rusher. I think at pick 36, I know fans really want running back and all this stuff. I would not be shocked if they went center, thinking we can get a running back later in the draft. Let's get a center here who is a long-term answer for us. And like Creed Humphrey, if he's there on the board, which I think he probably will be, is probably a really good fit for what the Miami Dolphins want and need at center. So that'll be interesting. Real quick, let's talk about some guards. I don't want to ignore the guards. I'm just going to throw a few names at you. Let me know what you think. Wyatt Davis from Ohio State.
I really like him. I think a lot of people have kind of soured on him, and I don't think he was as good this year as he was as a redshirt sophomore. He's now a redshirt junior. He's still like a top 35 player for me. I think he's very, very good. Good size, good athletic ability, good power. Maybe he's not, you know, the bona fide first round player that we all thought he was, but that doesn't mean he's bad. I think he comes in and he's a starting guard and you're happy with his play. And, you know, he's not someone that you're going to look to upgrade in 2 years. I think that he's solid. I also think that there's a decent ceiling there. So I really like Wyatt Davis. I'm still very high on him. Other people have soured on him. I still think he's very good. I think you can insert him early and he can start and give you good reps and also give you a decent ceiling to develop for the future.
Trey Smith from Tennessee.
Oh, that's a tough man. That's a tough one. He's another guy with like major injury concerns. I mean, blood clots is his injury concern. I just have the word blood clots written in red on my scouting report. His film is good, right? Good athlete, incredibly powerful, might be the most powerful player in this class. It's either him or Landon Dickerson, in my opinion, or maybe Penei Sewell. But like those would be like the top three guys for me. Very much in line with what the Dolphins seem to value in their offensive linemen, big bodies who move people. That is Trey Smith. But again, you've got to look at the blood clots thing, and then you've got to look at even his play is a little bit inconsistent. I still think he's very good. He's currently a top 50 player for me. I'm not sure he finishes there as I kind of round out the class because he's very much on the fringe. But he's going to end up with a second round grade. I just think, again, you have to check the medicals, make sure that he's okay. You know, they did that with Austin Jackson last year, also had a blood thing going on, right? So, and they were comfortable with that. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Dolphins were comfortable with Smith. But his play is a little bit up and down. And again, you have the medicals. But I think that if you get the best version of Trey Smith, he's very, very good. The problem is that there is a floor there that is also very scary. But I would argue that even his middle is okay as well. So again, another guy you bring in, I think he's a good scheme fit for what Miami wants to do. But there's a little bit more murkiness in his evaluation.
Here's a name that I've heard some people absolutely rave about, and that is Kendrick Green out of Illinois.
That's an interesting one. He is an interesting player because, again, I think that he's a zone center. He's a guy that you want moving, you know, stepping in one direction, using angles to block guys. I don't think that he's a player that the Dolphins are going to be over the moon with. They prefer guys who are more people movers. And that is not Green. I think his biggest problem right now is functional strength, his ability to anchor in pass protection. But again, if you want to draft him on day three and you're like, you know what, we're going to put more weight on him and we're going to bulk him up and we're going to give him 2 years of development and then we're going to put him in the lineup. Yeah, you know what? Maybe that'd be a really good idea because he's clearly a very, very good athlete. And if you miss on Humphrey and if Dickerson's off your board because of medicals, you might just be willing to take a dice roll on a guy that you're like, you know what? We're going to sit him for 2 years. We're going to take him in the fifth round and we're going to put him in our weight program and we're going to be comfortable with where he's at in year two or year three. And that's when we're going to give him a shot. But right now, I don't think he projects as a scheme fit for the Dolphins. But again, they can make him into one if they want.
Yeah, because the people I've heard mention him, they don't like him. They love him. So there's certain people who love this kid, but I think what you said is fair as well. It might be a little bit of a project to get on the field in the NFL, but I think there's a lot there to work with. And in this draft, in all drafts, you're looking for, can we get a kid who's an athlete who has the traits that you want, and can we mold him to fill a role? And I think with someone like Green, he's exactly that. So I can see why some people, not all, but some people really love that kid. Who are some sleepers here in this class for guards? Some guys late round three might go not picked at all. Who are some guys?
Yeah, so I'll pull a guard and a center because there's a center that I really want to talk about.
Okay.
The guard that I want to pull is, I don't know if I'd necessarily call him a sleeper, but he just doesn't seem to be getting the right amount of hype. And that for me is Aaron Banks out of Notre Dame. He's incredibly good. I don't know if he's going to be, he might be a sleeper to like the media and casual fans. I don't think he's going to be a sleeper for the NFL. This is a player who I think comes in and he's a starting guard right away. Very, very powerful, good long arms. He's a solid athlete, not going to blow you away, but I think he comes in and he's like the quintessential. He's been our starting guard for 8 years and we're okay with that. That's the type of player that I see with Aaron Banks. Center, I'm going to go with a bit more of a deeper cut because I just think that this player is way too fun for me not to mention. That's David Moore out of Grambling. He is like built like a cube. The man is as wide as he is tall, but my Lord, is he impressively mobile for his size. He tested out of this world for somebody who weighs close to 350 pounds, I believe. I think you're obviously going to have to cut a little bit of weight. Look, he's a project. He's like sixth, seventh round. I'm not saying you spend a high pick on him, but like, man, you do not see athleticism in a player his size very often. And he was incredibly, incredibly good at the Senior Bowl. I mean, just really good. Had no problem with the level of competition. He might have been the best offensive lineman at that event. So he's a player that I would look at late on day three as like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to get this guy. We're going to cut some weight off him. And again, like you said, he has the traits. The traits are there. The traits are undeniable. His film is a ton of fun. If you have time, I highly recommend going to YouTube and just Googling David Moore Grambling State film and just watch him chuck fools around the yard for 40 minutes. It's incredibly entertaining. Again, not a player you want to spend a high pick on, not a player that you want to invest, you know, a lot of capital into, but like, if you can get him late, I think he's incredibly fun. I think he's a great developmental project. You can make him into whatever the heck you want. Just the incredible athlete for his size and really, really fun. I think he's going to be the type of player, the mauler type that Miami likes. So that would be a sleeper that I would peg. It's a super deep cut, but I just had to talk about David Moore, man. His film is incredibly entertaining.
Yeah. And that'll wrap up this show as we cover the running backs and all the offensive line. Like I said, I wanted to start with these two spots because I do think with those four picks in the top 50, I would not be shocked in the least to see one of them be a running back and one of them be an offensive lineman of some sort, particularly a center. So I wanted to get these two spots off, these two spots to start off our draft preview. Each week we'll have a show where we cover two position groups, although our next show we might cover three in that. Here's why. Wide receiver, we have to talk about next, clearly. And tight end, I'm going to throw into there as well. But we're going to sort of fly through the quarterbacks this year because unlike last year where we had to do a deep dive into quarterbacks, this year we really don't. We have a quarterback. Now, we might take a guy middle to the end of the draft, someone to sort of groom maybe to be a number two quarterback over time. So we're going to talk about the quarterbacks, but we're not going to spend a ton of time. So I think the next show, we'll go wide receivers and tight ends, and then we'll throw in the quarterback because I don't think there's a lot to talk about with the quarterbacks. We're not going to – our preview shows, for those of you sort of who weren't with us last year at this time, we sort of have these made for the Miami Dolphins group. So we're not going to spend time on Trevor Lawrence. We know he's great. Trevor Lawrence, best quarterback in the draft. He ain't going to Miami, so we're not going to talk a lot about Trevor Lawrence. Same when it comes to guys like Zach Wilson and Fields and Trey Lance. We'll talk about them briefly for like a second, but we're going to move on to guys who, where there might be a chance they end up in Miami. So I think the next show, we'll just clean up the offense and talk about wide receivers, tight ends, and a little bit of the quarterbacks and some of the guys who in the middle rounds where Miami might take, because we have so many picks again, you know, they will probably take a quarterback in this draft. It might not be to round 5, 6, or 7, or maybe even 4, somewhere around there. But it's worth talking about those guys in that group and who could be a fit for our Miami Dolphins. So, Dante, tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Dante Colonelli, DanteColonelli. And you can check out all my Dolphins work at DolphinsTalk.com.
Absolutely. So, everyone, and also, I should say, be sure to go to DolphinsTalk.com. We have a ton of new content up, a ton of new articles. We got all the fallout from last week's trade when Miami went from 3 to 12 to 6. We got a ton of new videos up, podcast. We got it all. And also, we totally forgot, Manscaped.com, Dante. Manscaped.com. Go there. Use the promo code DolphinsTalk. Save 20% on your order and get free shipping. So everyone, go to manscaped.com, easy for me to say. And also, if you're just be sure you're following us on Twitter at Dolphins Talk, and make sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel. We have a bunch of new YouTube content going up, so go to YouTube and search Dolphins Talk and subscribe to our YouTube page. We're putting a bunch of new content up on there each and every day. So everyone, have a great Tuesday. And we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.